Blog Talk Radio.
Of the book club for another few weeks. We have another few chapters in part two of the book. We've gotten through part one. We actually started part two last week, and we will continue for the remainder of this beautiful book, and that involves discussing how we interact with other women, understanding that how we interact with ourselves sets the foundation for all those other interactions. So let me again say welcome. I am Michelle Hollinger, your very grateful host, and I'm really thankful that you guys hang out with me on Wednesday nights at 7:30 for this really important discussion. And I want to give a number so that if you all want to call in, really if you have any questions or comments about anything we've discussed so far, whether it's part one or the beginning of part two last week, you can call in at 646-595-2081. And when you call in, if you want to call in just to listen, you can do that. But if you want to join me on the air, then just press 1, and I'll get an indication on my studio screen to bring you into the discussion. And I'm hoping that some of you will call in tonight with your experience with the G word. You know, if you've been the topic of gossip, or if you've found yourself involved in it somehow, you know, whether discussing it with someone else or giving them an audience for it, then I would love for you to call in and just, you know, be candid and to talk about that experience, because I think that the more that we discuss issues like that, the more women who don't understand how detrimental it is will understand how detrimental it is. So, yeah, before I get started, let me do a little bit of housekeeping like I normally do. If you are listening to the show online, please do me a favor and click on the blue follow tab that's on the website for the radio show. That helps me to keep you up to date with what's going on with the show. And you'll get a reminder on the same day that the show airs, and probably like maybe half an hour before, and then right as the show starts, you'll get a reminder that the show is going to be airing. And if you are interested, you could also go to the Facebook page and check us out on the Facebook page. I post inspirational, challenging sometimes, motivational information about sisterhood. It's all about sisterhood. The Facebook page is all about sisterhood. This radio show is all about sisterhood. The book, of course, is all about sisterhood. If you don't already have it, it's available on Amazon in ebook or paperback format. Okay. And, oh, also, the book is also available at independent bookstores all across the country. I forgot to tell you guys that. They snuck that in. That snuck that bit of information in on me. The publisher did. I should have known that it was available because the hardback is available. So the paperback is also available. So if you have an independent bookstore in your area, if you are blessed to have an independent bookstore in your area, because they are such treasures to me, then I would encourage you, if you don't already have the book, to go into your independent bookstore. And if it's not on the shelf, you can ask the manager to order it for you, and they'll be happy to do that. So, yeah, I think I cover everything as far as housekeeping is concerned. And I'll do just a real brief recap of what we've discussed so far before we go into part two, just in case we have any new listeners, so that they'll have some background for where we're going with this discussion about sisterhood. If you guys have not determined by now, I love sisterhood. I think it is one of the best things about being a woman. There are a lot of good things about being a woman. But as it relates to how we relate to other women, that's like what we can do with it, it just has such enormous potential. It just has the potential to go to this level that not only makes your life sweeter, but it makes the women who interact with you and women who see you from afar, women who perhaps see you at work, you know, you gift them. When you get sisterhood and you live from a space that demonstrates day in and day out that you get sisterhood, you give, it's a ripple effect. And you bless other women who may, you know, young girls who may just be starting to understand or just to have some idea about what sisterhood is. You give them a gift when you demonstrate it at a high level. So I just really enjoy discussing sisterhood. So that's one of the main reasons. I'm going to speak clearly tonight, I promise you guys. That's one of the main reasons that I'm sure God allowed me to write this book, why God poured it through me. So, okay, doing my deep breathing. You guys know how important that is by now, right? Okay, so we went into the preface, of course, and talked about what sisterhood is and how powerful it is and, you know, where it gets started. It starts when we're born as little girls, you know. We come into the world enjoying sisterhood, because if you look at two little girls in a playpen together, they get sisterhood. You know, they haven't been exposed to anything, you know, that redefines sisterhood for them. They may eventually, you know, depending on how they grow up, and that's one of the other things that is talked about in the preface, that little girls come to define sisterhood based on how it's defined by the women in their space, by the women in their families, by the women that they are most exposed to. And it's done, you know, by the way that women talk about other women, and it's also done nonverbally by the way that, you know, that they react with their bodies, with their eye contact or lack thereof, with just the way that they move and breathe as it relates to sisterhood, you know. Some of the messages that we adult women give to our daughters, our nieces, you know, our little cousins, our neighbors, whatever. Some of the messages that we give them about sisterhood, we don't even realize that we're giving them that message because it's done nonverbally. You know, the way a woman walks past and, you know, we give them the side eye for whatever reason, may not even know the sister. And, you know, our daughters and our nieces and the little girls in our lives, they see that. They pick up on that, you know. So, yeah, I talked about where sisterhood, our notion of sisterhood comes from, and primarily it comes from the women that we're exposed to, you know, when we're little girls. And if that's all that we're exposed to, then that is what we normalize, that is what we internalize. That's how we see sisterhood. We don't know that there's something else as it relates to, you know, the quality of sisterhood. If we've not been exposed to women who get sisterhood, then we may grow up believing that that's all there is to sisterhood, the negative variety of sisterhood. And so the preface talked about that, and it talked about how if a little girl is exposed to a more positive version of sisterhood, then the negative version of sisterhood that she's been exposed to, it may not anchor itself so deeply within her. You know, if she recognizes that there's something else to sisterhood, then, you know, that negative variety may not or might not take anchor within her as deeply as it could if that's all that she's exposed to. Okay. I also went into the seven principles of the sisterhood of self. And the sisterhood of self, of course, is part one of the book, but it's also a phrase that Spirit poured through me that I coined that really describes the relationship that we have with ourselves. And that relationship sets the foundation for everything. It sets the foundation for the quality of our life. It sets the foundation for how we interact and behave with other women. It sets the foundation for really for everything. For every aspect of our lives, right? And so the seven principles of the SOS say that every woman has an SOS that is either active or inactive. That's the first one. Every single one of us, you know, we have this thing called an SOS, a sisterhood of self. But if we've not done any work to activate it, then it's just there. And I compared it to faith because every single person is born with faith, whether they're religious or not, because faith is not a religious quality, it's a spiritual quality. And so every single person is born with faith, but if you never use your faith, then you have no idea how powerful it is and what it can actually accomplish through you. Faith works through you, but you have to engage it. You have to have a belief about the faith in order for it to be effective, right? Faith without works is dead. Okay, so the sisterhood of self is very similar in that each of us has an SOS. But if we're not aware that there are things that we can do to activate it, then it may just, you know, rest dormant within us for our entire life. And to live your entire life without activating your faith, without, as a woman, activating your SOS, then there's some things that you are going to miss out on. No doubt about it. There are some things that can only come through you because it's encased in your inner splendor that has to do with your life purpose. There's some things that you're going to miss out on, you know, that only you can do, that has your unique signature on it if you don't do the work required to activate your SOS. And I call it the SOS, but it's women have activated their SOS way before I coined it an SOS. Okay, so you know, just women who get it, women who spend time with themselves, women who spend time in the silence. So let me go through the rest of the principles because they cover those things that I just mentioned. Okay, so the second principle says the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence daily. And that is a non-negotiable. That is one of those things that really and truly is a gift that we give to ourselves. And it's the most effective way to activate your SOS, because when you start to spend time in the silence, you recognize that there is just so much inside of you that is just bursting to get out. You know, there's so much goodness, there's so much wisdom, there's so much enlightenment. You know, you can't get to know who you really are if you're not spending time in the silence with your own thoughts, examining your life, you know, gaining understanding about who you are, why you are the way that you are, you know, gaining understanding about why certain things happened in your life and you know, cause you to see life the way that you do, you know, or helped you to see life the way that you do. Spending time in the silence is non-negotiable, and it is certainly a gift that we give to ourselves, and it is one of the most important principles of activating the SOS. The next principle of an active SOS says that self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS. So once you started spending time in the silence, and you've activated your SOS, you will be given this gift to yourself, this ability to forgive yourself for past mistakes, poor judgment. You will start to feel this growing sense of compassion where you just are just far more willing to cut yourself some slack, you know, in a way that you haven't been before. Because when you spend time in the silence, you just start to see things differently. You start to understand that, you know, on a grander scale, that when we know better, we do better, and you become more capable of applying that statement to yourself, right? And so along with that statement of knowing better and doing better comes compassion, self-compassion, and certainly an ability to forgive yourself, right? Okay, so let me breathe. Next principle, the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. And I talk about that a lot because we're the only person who has control over our thoughts. We're the only person who has control over our words. You might think, you know, that you have no control over it, but when you recognize just how much control you have over your own thoughts and your own words, you realize just how powerful you are. And when you recognize the correlation between your thoughts and words and your life, oh, my God, the power just goes to an entirely different level. Because you speak things into existence. You think things, into existence. Your words and your thoughts have far more power than you realize. And activating your SOS, you know, a part of it involves taking control of your thoughts, taking control of your words. you know, not saying a phrase because it's a popular phrase, you know, and you don't realize how detrimental it is, but just recognizing, just spending time analyzing what flows through your mental garden, spending time analyzing the words that you allow to come out of your mouth. It's a gift that you give yourself again, and it's one of the principles of an active SOS. The next one says that an active SOS thrives in gratitude. You guys hear me talk about gratitude all the time because it's a game changer. Changes the way you look at things, changes the way you feel about everything, actually. You know, you are able to not sweat the small stuff the way that you used to. When you thrive in gratitude, when you operate from a position of gratitude, when you move through your life, you know, and gratitude is a consistent daily part of how you exist, the way you look at life, the way you look at things, the way you look at people, all of that changes. And, you know, one of the main things that I talked about when we went into that whole discussion about gratitude was the idea of keeping a gratitude journal, of writing down every day, you know, at least 5 things that you're grateful for. And, you know, recognizing that when you put something as powerful as experiences that you're grateful for in writing, it sends powerful, lasting messages to your subconscious mind, because your subconscious mind, again, is like tofu. And if you've ever had tofu, you know that it's flavorless. It takes on the flavor of whatever you give it, you know. So if you add something sweet to it, you know, it becomes sweet. If you add something bitter to it, it becomes bitter. Your subconscious mind takes on the energy of the thoughts and the words that you give to it, which is why it's so important to pay attention to your thoughts and words. And then, you know, if you get into the habit of anchoring gratitude in your life on a daily basis by writing down at least 5 things for which you're grateful that happened that day, at least 5. And, you know, again, I said that some days, you know, it'll be a challenge to get those 5 things down. You may just put the basics. And then the other days, it'll be a challenge to stop your pen from moving, because once you get into the flow of paying attention to gratitude in your life, there's some things that happen every single day that we don't notice because we're just not focused on it, you know. But when you have to write it down every day, you start to pay more attention to, you know, some things that may happen on a daily basis, or, you know, new things that happen. But, you know, when you get into the habit of it, of recognizing gratitude, the more things you'll notice, you know, for which to be grateful. And as you write that in your gratitude journal, you are sending a message to your subconscious mind to bring on more experiences that make me feel grateful. Bring more people into my life that make me feel this sense of gratitude. That's the message that you give your subconscious mind when you get into the habit of embracing gratitude to that degree that you write it down. And then it's a beautiful gift, you know, on those days where you might have find it challenging to write at least 5 things down. If you flip back through your pages, you know, over the last week, the last month, however long you've been keeping a gratitude journal, you'll start to see, oh my goodness, I have all these wonderful blessings. That's redundant. All these blessings in my life, and it'll trigger something, and it'll help you to see that, you know, it just doesn't stop. It's like this faucet that just keeps flowing, you know, nonstop. When you start focusing on gratitude, you can't stop it. Who wants to stop gratitude? Who wants to stop experiences that make you feel grateful, right? Okay, so the next principle is an active SOS provides access to inner splendor, which reveals life purpose. Okay, that's that unique thing that has your name on it, and it's inside of you. That's the only place where you can find it. That's the only place where you can find it. And when you are in the process of activating and maintaining the activation of your SOS, you will, if you haven't already, you will encounter your inner splendor. You will get confirmation of what your life purpose is. Your life purpose comes from the inside out. There are things in your life that are clues that you've attracted to yourself, experiences, people, books, music, you know, a message at church. The pastor, you know, may have delivered a sermon that you felt had your name all over it. Okay, and when you spend time in the silence, when you spend time getting to know, you know, who you really are, and you start tapping into that inner splendor, you recognize what you're here to do. You recognize what your life purpose is. You may have more than one thing to do, but there's usually a theme about it, you know. But all of that stuff just starts to become crystal clear by activating and maintaining the activation of your SOS, okay? And then the seventh principle says that the quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. So the first six principles of the SOS have to do with the sisterhood of self. And then the seventh, of course, it goes into, it really leads into part two, sister to sister. The quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. And so that's the discussion that we started last week. Let's see. I won't go through all of the chapters that we've gone through with the sisterhood of self, because I think that the principles pretty much cover, you know, what each of those chapters revealed to us. And those are some really good chapters. If you haven't had a chance to read all of them, I just really encourage you to do that, because it's some powerful stuff, you know. And the purpose of the sisterhood exchange is ultimately, I think that, you know, when we get to a point, you know, and many of us already are, where our sisterhood of self is active, that thing is thriving, you know, is practically on autopilot, the way that we interact with other women, we don't really have to give that any thought, because it comes from that space. It comes from that authentic, sacred space of knowing that everything that's going on within you, the women that you attract into your life, they also have that good stuff going on within them, right? And women who may not have those kinds of qualities going on within them, you know, and in their life, because of where you're coming from, you just have more compassion. You're able to see that, to see them, rather, with a greater degree of compassion, you know, and really understanding and really embodying that phrase, when we know better, we do better. Okay, so I am going to go on into part two and do a little bit of a review on what we've covered in that section. Let me give the number again, just in case any of you who are listening online would like to call in with a question, comment, or brilliant insight. And I know you guys know this number by heart if you've been listening to this show. 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to join me on the air. And let me just say thank you again if you're just joining me for tuning in to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club, which is taking over the radio show for another few weeks. And so we last week we went into part two of the book. You know, the book is separated into two parts. Part one, Sisterhood of Self, which is the review that I just did, and then part two is Sister to Sister, you know, how we interact with other women. And we started out last week by, I shared the poem with you, The Sisterhood Exchange. And it says, you see her with fine-tuned vision, clarified essence. You see her in your home, on the screen, in the street. You see her as residual fear, rejection, unworthiness, and at least one of the isms grow smaller in the distance. You see her, head held high, beaming eyes, her SOS radiating sparks. Familiar eyes reciprocate, whisper thanks to him for her, an unspoken, deeply felt, you go girl. Mutual lights glowing, lifting, honoring, each strengthening the other through the energy exchange called sisterhood. One of these days I'm going to say that poem, you know, in spoken word style, and have you guys snapping your fingers like they do in the spoken word venues. That's a pretty cool poem. So the next chapter in part two is Sister to Sister, and I just gave that just really gives a nice summary of how it starts to unfold for you, you know, if you've done the work with the sisterhood of self. You know, some things start to happen as it relates to how you interact with other women, and Sister to Sister talks about that. One of the benefits, it says on page 49, you know, I really need to put on my glasses. If my brother's listening, stop laughing, Nilan. Okay, page 49. One of the benefits of an active SOS is that you begin to see the sacred in the space where other women exist. You become keenly aware that your possession of an SOS is universal, that all women have one that is either asleep or awake, active or inactive. And the more awake yours becomes, the more you want other women to experience it too. You begin to understand that a woman's current issues did not magically appear, and you're willing to exchange judgment for compassion because, as Sister Maya Angelou wisely told us, when you know better, you do better. Your quote-unquote friends and enemies are morphing into friends and teachers. Increasingly, women who want to see you shine start to appear with regularity, just as you're wondering what's up with your growing desire to see other women excel. Where jealousy reared its head in the past, you're surprised by a bubbling joy that now feels real. A subtle desire to improve the quality of the energy that flows sister to sister is emerging within you. Like dormant faith, a mustard seed-sized bit of intention added to an SOS, to an active SOS, takes your sisterhood exchanges to an entirely different level. And last week, we jumped right into a doozy of a chapter. We talked about our relationships with our mothers, and that chapter is called Honor Your First Sisterhood Exchange. Really, really powerful chapter because it just really illuminates just how significant that relationship, that mother-daughter relationship is as it relates to how we see ourselves, how we see our world, and how we engage sister to sister. And so with that chapter, I encouraged you, if you have a relationship or if you had a relationship with your mother that was nurturing, that was authentic, that was, you know, rooted in this powerful, beautiful, sacred quality of sisterhood, if you had the kind of mother who, you know, who was there for you and encouraged you to be your best, who, you know, was there for you when things didn't turn out the way you wanted them to, if you have that kind of mother, then you are blessed far more than you realize. And this chapter, it just encourages you to, you know, in addition to her birthday and Mother's Day, which is coming up on Sunday, to set aside another day, a special day, to honor her in some form or fashion that comes, you know, specifically from you. And the purpose for that is to say, you know, through your words and your actions that you are grateful. You are grateful that you have her as a mother and that, you know, her presence in your life helped you to become the woman that you are today. You know, so however you, you know, wanted to honor her with whatever kind of celebration or, you know, gift or what have you, that this chapter talks about that. And then this chapter went into why it's also important if you have a mother who's opposite of that, if you have a mother who has not activated her SOS, if you have a mother or you had a mother who, you know, who doesn't or did not realize her inner power, who never accessed her inner splendor, who never realized her life purpose, and if a woman cannot do those things for herself, then it's less likely that she'll be able to do it for someone else. Now, there are some mothers who grew up, you know, in an environment where they weren't able to activate their SOS. You know, they weren't encouraged to be authentic. They weren't pushed to, you know, to discover what their life purpose was. And because of those experiences, they grew up and decided, you know what, it's going to be different for my daughter. I am going to be in my daughter's life what, you know, the adults in my life were not. And so there are some women who understand that they have the power to create the kind of relationship that they want with their daughters. And then you have other women who had those horrible experiences and who internalized it. And despite her best intentions, she still was not or is not able to be something different for her daughter, to provide, you know, something at a higher level for her daughter, right? But what this book says is that even if you had or you have that type of mother, you still owe her a debt of gratitude. Because from a spiritual perspective, and I believe this with every fiber of my being, we choose our parents. I believe that. I believe that, you know, before we show up on planet Earth, that, you know, in the spirit world with the universe, we are blessed with the opportunity to select a woman, to select a mother who will, through intention or not, provide the best lesson that we can experience in order for us to become who we are here to become. And that's what this chapter talked about, why it's so important for you to get to a space in your life where you are willing to understand that your mother did the best that she possibly could with what she knew, with what she experienced, with the way that she saw the world, you know, and to understand that just as some of our own childhood experiences still impact us now, our mothers are no different. Our mothers may have had something to happen in their childhood that impacted, you know, the women that they became, and then, of course, the mothers that they were. And so that this chapter just really encourages you to just, you know, look at the bigger picture and to understand that, you know, again, that whole phrase about when we know better, we do better, right? So let me breathe on that. Okay. And again, the number, if you want to call in with a question about last week's discussion or any other previous discussions before we get into the next one for tonight, is 646-595-2081. And so tonight's discussion, continuing in part two of the book, Sister to Sister, the section called Sister to Sister and the Sisterhood Exchange, is just right straight to the point. Stop gossiping. Stop it. Just stop gossiping. That's it. That's the end of the chapter. Just stop. Just stop gossiping. Okay, I'm teasing, of course. I'm going to read what the chapter actually says. Okay. I'm on page 57 of the book. And it begins, you know the scenario. You are with a group of friends when the topic of discussion turns to you-know-who, the female that seems to take up most of your talk time. She's the one who seems to make up. Let me start over because I had to click something on the studio and it caused me to lose my space, my place. Okay. You know the scenario. You are with a group of friends when the topic of discussion turns to you-know-who, the female that seems to take up most of your talk time. She's the one who seems to make one stupid mistake after the other, from choosing the wrong man to having those no-manners, out-of-control children, to messing up yet another job interview by saying the wrong thing and or wearing the wrong outfit. The atmosphere is charged with a strange kind of energy. You feel justified in dishing the dirt. However, a tinge of guilt hangs in the air. You're gossiping again. As harmless as it feels, please know this. You will never fully activate your SOS, never reach your full potential, never fully savor important life goals, never feel the inner peace that you are entitled to if gossip is a major event in your life. It is a colossal waste of energy that damages those who engage in it far more than the subject of their gossip. Gossip is nasty and vile. Gossip celebrates the mistakes and poor judgment of another. Gossip is a great pretender. Those dishing it out sometimes pretend to be doing so out of concern for their subject, dissecting and analyzing her actions. How could she? Why doesn't she just? When is she going to? Those who partake of this tasteless practice are often quick to deny that what they're doing amounts to gossip. Here's the test. If the subject of your quote-unquote discussion suddenly appears, having heard all the juicy details and your interpretation of them, and your reaction is embarrassment or defensiveness, you were gossiping, plain and simple. Gossip's side effects make it a bad habit. Gossip weakens you, it makes you feel small, and it does no good whatsoever. Gossip exudes negative energy, and negative energy attracts negative energy. Look at the chronic gossips that you know, gossipers that you know. They live mediocre lives not because they have no talent, dreams, or goals. They live mediocre lives because the energy, the creative, the physical, and the spiritual energy necessary for making their talent, dreams or goals real is being wasted on gossip. Wasted energy is not its only casualty. Chronic gossipers are difficult to trust. The same folk who dish the dirt with the chronic gossipers don't trust her as far as they can throw her because they've seen her in action. They've seen what she can do with other people's, with others' mistakes and poor judgment, or even worse, she's been seen laughing at somebody else's dreams. How can they trust her with theirs? Here's the truth about chronic gossipers. They have low self-esteem and somehow believe that putting others down results in self-elevation. The truth is, chronic gossipers see aspects of themselves in the folk they talk about, and they use their subjects' mishaps as validation of their own shortcomings. Quote, unquote, see, I'm not the only screw-up. An active SOS repels gossip because it is based, the active SOS is based in integrity. An active SOS clarifies murky, previously unidentified sensations that flow within you, like how gossiping really makes you feel. Silence strips gossip of its power, creating a transparency behind which guilt, embarrassment, and shame can no longer hide. Left unattended, they naturally dissolve. Allow them to. Tread carefully. Brace yourself. Welcome the emerging angst disguised as remorse, but don't get bogged down by it. Feel it. There's energy swirling beneath it, seeking to express itself through you. The remorse-like funk is dissolved in the silence as positive energy sent to your former subjects passes through it. That's how an active SOS works. As your immersion into it deepens, you open the portal for its inherent power to unleash itself into your life, flowing, shifting energy, reminding you that your life is too special, too awesome, too full of wonder, joy, and simple pleasures to be tarnished by a trifling, goodness-sapping vice called gossip. Wait, there's more. Delve deeper and access an inner desire to forgive yourself for whatever mistakes and poor judgment you used when gossiping. Linger in that sacred space for a moment as your SOS reminds you that you were doing the best that you knew how, and with better knowing comes better doing. All right. So let me go back and go paragraph by paragraph. The last part of this chapter, I really, you know, was used by spirit, because when I went back and read it, first of all, I said, who wrote this? I say that a lot with stuff that I write. When I know that I've completely surrendered and I've allowed spirit, I've allowed the universe to just pour through me, sometimes when I go back and read it, I don't remember that I wrote it. And that is really, you know, largely the case with the second to last paragraph of this book, of this chapter. And this topic to me is just one that is so necessary for us to have, because especially now with the prevalence of reality shows, you know, where gossip is like, you know, it's almost like one of the main characters on the shows. And then you see television shows that are solely devoted to gossiping about, you know, celebrities. Wendy Williams gets paid to gossip about people, and, you know, she gets paid to gossip. And some of these other shows have other people on there who get paid to gossip. And you know, the mainstay, again, in many of the reality shows is gossip. And it makes gossip appear as though it's harmless, as though it causes, you know, no adverse effects on anyone who's engaged in it. Come across as though there's really no harm to it, you know, because you see these people on the reality shows with their, you know, material possessions, and they appear to be quote-unquote successful. But when you understand what true success is, true success comes from the inside out, and gossip is not a part of it. It's just not. Okay, I'm digressing a bit here, so let me go back to this particular chapter. And the first paragraph, of course, talks about how to know when you're gossiping. You know, you're with a group of friends, and, you know, the topic of discussion turns to, and it's usually the same person that, you know, that this group of friends talks about. And everyone seems to be, you know, conveying concern about this particular person. But, again, you know, if that person were to magically appear, if they you know, you were somewhere in a public setting and they you know, you realized after you guys have really gotten into the discussion, they've been standing there all along listening to the entire conversation. Or, you know, for whatever reason or in whatever capacity, they were able to get wind of the entire conversation, you know, and you knew that unequivocally, right? If you were embarrassed or if you felt, you know, if you got defensive, then that's confirmation that that conversation was totally and completely gossip, all right? So let me see. Bottom of that page, on page, the first page of the chapter, and this is my description of what gossip is. It's nasty and vile. Gossip celebrates the mistakes and poor judgment of another. I'm going to stop right there because we all know that we all make mistakes and that we all use poor judgment. It's a part of being alive. It's a part of being a human being. It's a part of moving through this life, you know, that we've been blessed with. We make mistakes and we use poor judgment. And when we are, you know, immersed in gossip, essentially what we're doing is we're expressing some type of gratitude because somebody else made a mistake or somebody else used poor judgment. So that's what, in my opinion, gossip really boils down to, okay? It's a great pretender, those dishing it out sometimes pretend to be doing so out of concern for their subject, dissecting and analyzing her actions, you know, how could she, why doesn't she just, when is she going to? And the other thing about that, God, I just lost my train of thought. Going to be doing so out of concern. Oh. The thing that some people will say before they start gossiping is, I'm not gossiping, or this really isn't gossip, you know, as though making that statement nullifies what the content of the conversation really is. You know, saying I'm not gossiping or this isn't gossip doesn't change the fact that you're gossiping or that, you know, the content of the conversation really is gossip, right? Okay. Those who partake of this tasteless practice are often quick to deny that what they're doing is, okay, I just said that. Gossip side effects make it a bad habit. Gossip weakens you, makes you feel small, and does no good whatsoever. Gossip exudes negative energy, and negative energy attracts negative energy. That's what I mean when I say that gossip does more harm to the person who's gossiping than the person who's being gossiped about, because gossip is just negative energy personified, negative energy, you know, like in concentrate. And when you exude negative energy, this is just a spiritual law. This is that law that says what goes around comes around. What you put out is what you attract. What you think about, you bring about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What you reap, you sow. When you gossip, when you are immersed in this negative conversation about another human being, the energy that you are exuding is toxic and is negative and is bad. And what you put out is what you attract into your life. And so you're talking about this other person, you know, and if you are a chronic gossiper, then your intention is to convey negativity onto that person. But she's not being touched by your gossip. She really is not, unless she's aware of it, she has some clue about it, and she allows it to affect her. The person who's being most affected by the gossip is the gossiper, the person who is exuding that negative energy. This is what happens when you gossip. All of your energy and your focus is placed on that conversation. Is placed on this other person's life, what's going on with this other person. And you have no energy and no focus for what's going on in your life when all of it is being focused on somebody else. That's one of the losses that the gossiper experiences. And that's why in this chapter I say that, you know, if you look at the chronic gossipers, you know they live mediocre lives, not because they have no talent, dreams, or goals. They live mediocre lives because the energy, the creative energy, the physical energy, the spiritual energy necessary for making their talent, dreams, and goals real is being wasted on gossip. You can't focus on your life purpose if you're focused on gossiping about other people. Because, number one, you have to stay up to date with what's going on in their life, or at least what you think is going on in your life, in their life, so that you can have something to gossip about. And to the extent that you are devoting all of this energy to other people, that's energy that you are not using for your own life. That's energy that you are not using to achieve the things that you say you want to achieve. You know? I like to picture it, to help you picture it like this, okay? Say that your front door of your house, okay, is what is coming into your life, and the back door is what is going out of your life, right? All right? So the front door is, you know, a litany of goodness, a long list of wonderful things that, you know, they're either ringing your doorbell or knocking on your door. They want to come into your life, right? But if you are gossiping, you're at the back door of your life. You're at the back door preoccupied with what's going on in somebody else's life. You can't hear what's happening at your front door. You cannot hear the goodness that's trying to come into your life because you're preoccupied with your back door. You're preoccupied with what's going on with someone else. You're preoccupied with what's the phrase that the kids use now? Throwing shade, I think is what it's called. Let me stay in my lane. You're too busy gossiping about somebody else to pay attention to your own front door and the goodness that God and the universe, spirit, whatever your higher power is, it is there knocking on your front door. It is there ringing your doorbell. It is there trying to get your attention, trying to get you to spend time in the silence to recognize what your inner splendor is, what your life purpose is. But you're at your back door. You're at your back door. You are so immersed in what's going on at your back door that you can't even hear the doorbell ringing. You can't even hear that there are knocks at your front door. That's what gossip does. People who are about their business, not only do they not have time for gossip, they don't have the interest for it because it doesn't do anything to move them forward. It doesn't do anything to help them to deal with the things that may be obstacles in their own life. You know, if fear is showing up in a big way in your life and you're preoccupied with gossip, guess what? Fear is going to just thrive in that atmosphere because fear is negative. Fear is going to thrive in that atmosphere. Fear is going to get bigger. Fear is going to feel unchallenged. Fear is going to feel like it has the upper hand because you're not doing anything to dissolve it. You are not doing anything to dissolve the obstacles in your own life if you are allowing gossip to play a huge, big, humongous role in your life. That's what that boils down to. If you are serious about not only discovering what your life purpose is, but actually doing what you have to do to make it manifest, gossip has no place in your life. It just really does not. And what I'm saying with this book is that when you do the work required to activate your SOS, when we go back to these seven principles, okay, when you spend time in the silence, when you forgive yourself, you know, when you experience this huge degree of self-compassion and you are able to forgive yourself, when you start to recognize how powerful your thoughts and words are, right? When you start to live, to thrive, to exist in an atmosphere of gratitude, you know, when you gain access to, or if you already had access to, but you just start to spend more time with your inner splendor, and you start to really get really crystal clear about what your life purpose is, all right, then all of that impacts number seven. The quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. So if you have invested, you know, quality time in yourself, if you are spending the time in the silence and doing everything else that's listed in these principles, then when you get to quality number seven, is determined by how seriously you took the first six principles. It's determined by whether you understand and you really embrace this chapter that talks about worthiness, and that worthiness is a decision. If you really, really, really understand how much of a waste of time it is for you to constantly look back on your past, you know, and beat yourself up about what you did do or what you didn't do, you know whether you had certain qualities or whether you did not have certain qualities, or if you've reached a certain age in your life and you're still beating yourself up because you haven't accomplished X, Y, and Z. You know, when you do all of the work as it relates to spending time in the silence, the self-forgiveness, the gratitude, the paying attention to your thoughts and words, you get to a place where all of those things no longer have the hold over you that they used to. You get to a place where, again, you recognize how important it is, and you recognize how you deserve to cut yourself some slack. When you do all of that stuff, when you get to a point where the need to be, which was the last chapter in part one of the book, when you do all of those things, that need to just be who you are without apology and without explanation, when you get to that point when all of these things are happening inside of you because you put in the work, man, you gossip. You might feel nauseous, you know, just with the idea of being, you know, immersed in gossip. It will start to just really get on your nerves. It will become one of your pet peeves, and it will dissolve from your life. It absolutely positively will. That's just how it works. That is just how it works. You know, if gossip is still a part of your life, then the principles in part one, the chapters in part one, you haven't taken that stuff seriously. You know, if this is a process that you are engaging in, you are saying, okay, I'm gonna throw myself into the Sisterhood Exchange. I'm gonna do, you know, what's in the first part of the book. I'm gonna immerse myself into these things because I deserve it. Because I take myself seriously and I deserve to live the life that I am here to live. All right? If you do that work, if you take yourself that seriously, if you give yourself that gift, gossiping, if it was an issue for you, for some of you it may not have been an issue, but if it was an issue for you, it'll be one of those things that just kind of drifts out of your life, you know, and people that, you know, may have felt comfortable coming to you with gossip, they would just realize that, you know what, I don't think I really want to go take this foolishness to Michelle this time, because there's something about her that just doesn't feel or doesn't seem as welcoming as it used to be when I used to bring this mess to her, right? One of the things that that I used to do, and I still do, I don't have to do it, you know, now, because people just don't come around me with gossip. They just don't. And I can't remember what happened with me that just made gossip so distasteful. But a friend of mine brought it to my attention once, that whenever we would be at a certain family member's house, right, and that we would congregate around a table to just have a, you know, just girl talk, just, you know, having a good time. But if the conversation turned to gossip, I would get up and leave without even thinking about it. I would just get up and remove myself from that environment. And at the time, I really cannot say that it was a conscious decision. I think that the energy in the space probably shifted, and I'm really sensitive to energy. I'm really, if negative energy is around me, I feel it. I just really, really feel it. And when that would happen, you know, as it does, when the topic turns to gossip, I would just get up and leave and did not even realize that I was doing it. I just did not. You know, I did not excuse myself. I did not explain anything to anybody. I would just get up and leave and, you know, go find something else to do. And one of my friends brought it to my attention once. You know, she said, I think the conversation turned to gossip, and she stopped whoever it was that was talking, wait, because Michelle's about to get up and leave. And it was so funny to me because I did not even realize it. But I'm just saying all that to say that once you, you know, embrace the awesomeness of who you are, just at a deep, deep, deep level, and trust me when I say this, that you are, whew, you are awesome. You are far more awesome than you give yourself credit for. All of us, we you know, that thing about us being our own worst critic, that plays a huge part in, you know, not giving ourselves credit for how awesome we are and, you know, just how magnificent we are. Society tells us that we're not supposed to say those things about ourselves, but we are. We are awesome. We are magnificent. We are fabulous. We are, you know, all of that. And when you get to a point where, you know, you just embrace that wholeheartedly and you recognize that that's a part of being a woman, embracing all of your goodness, all of your awesomeness, all of your magnificence, gossip just won't have any weight, any power in your life at all. At all. I'm telling you, it just won't. It just will not. So let me see if there's anything else that I want to talk about in this particular chapter. Yeah, it says, oh, yeah, I wanted to go into this last page, where I was just taken over because this is a chapter that's in the hard copy of the book. And I mentioned to you guys that the paperback has more chapters, but this is a chapter that got expanded. Some of the chapters that are in here from the hard copy, they're exactly the same as they were in the hard copy. But this is one of the few chapters that, you know, as I was meditating on the paperback version, this chapter got expanded. And the thing that I wanted to talk about is on page 59. Excuse me, and it says, an active SOS repels gossip because it is based in integrity. The active SOS is based in integrity. An active SOS clarifies murky, previously unidentified sensations that flow within you, like how gossiping really makes you feel. I want to stop right there because sometimes, you know, before you, you know, if gossip is a part of your life, before you claim your inner power, before you embrace your authenticity, you may continue to put yourself in situations where gossip exists, where gossip flows, right? And a part of that is that, you know, you don't want to disappoint the gossipers in the group. You're not ready, or you don't feel strong enough or courageous enough or whatever to, you know, let the people in your group know that, you know, that what they're doing is ineffective if, you know, their life purpose is important to them. And a part of it also is that you haven't really come to terms with how gossip really makes you feel, okay? And, again, it's a process because everything around us tells us that gossiping is cool, that gossiping is harmless, that, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, shooting a breeze and talking about somebody else because, you know, sticks and stones, you're not hurting them, right? And so you haven't really come to terms with just how detrimental gossip really is, right? So you may find yourself in, you know, situations where people are continuing to gossip because you haven't, you like, really clarified for yourself what's acceptable and what's no longer acceptable, right? So that's what that particular statement alluded to. But what happens with an active SOS, you know, you're spending time in the silence, you're forgiving yourself, you know, for poor judgment and past mistakes. You know, you're experiencing, you know, more gratitude. And if you are using your gratitude journal, Lord have mercy, you are definitely experiencing more gratitude. You have accessed your inner splendor. You are becoming even more convinced, if you weren't already, even more convinced of what your life purpose is, right? So when all of that happens, when you're spending time in the silence, silence strips gossip of its power, and it creates a transparency behind which guilt, embarrassment, and shame can no longer hide. So essentially with that, if you're spending time in the silence and you're feeling this inner power, this authentic strength that only comes from within, that only reveals itself in the silence, it becomes really, really clear to you how you really feel about gossip. What it really does, you know, to your inner psyche when you're in the space of other people who are gossiping, or if you are still gossiping, you know, it just becomes increasingly clear to you just how distasteful it is to be engaged in gossip. That's what happens when you spend time in the silence. That's what happens when you start to experience this self-compassion, because when you are able to experience self-compassion and you are able to forgive yourself, then your ability to experience compassion for other people and to forgive other people is amplified, right? And so people that may have, you know, been a topic of your gossip in the past, you start to see them differently. You start to see them differently. It doesn't mean that you have to become, you know, ace boom coons and, you know, BFFs and that kind of thing. That's not what that means. But you just start to see them through this compassion lens. You begin to see that, you know, appearances don't tell the whole story. It really, a person's appearance, what a person is presenting to you, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have no idea, you know, why that person behaves the way that they behave. We don't know what happened in their childhood. We don't know what they experienced. We don't know why they move through the world the way that they do. One of the most powerful things for me as it relates to not judging other people and at least trying not to judge other people. We all, I think, still have that human tendency. But to not act from it was when I was working on my master's degree at FIU, and one of the classes that I took was on chemical dependency, and so I had to do a written report. And so my written report was on the correlation between women who are addicted to illegal substances, you know, crack, cocaine, heroin, those kinds of serious drugs, having women who have serious addictions, the correlation between that and childhood sexual abuse. And so my research required that I contact, I forget how many different substance abuse programs I contacted in South Florida, and spoke to, you know, the person, the manager, to find out, you know, based on their records, what percentage of women who are in your program who have serious drug problems, you know, the women who are there to kick the drug problems, what percentage of them were sexually abused as little girls? And the lowest percentage was 60%. So at least, and in one case, the gentleman that I spoke to, he said, oh, that would easily be 90%. He said, and that's just of the ones who reported it, because some women will not, you know, divulge that happened to them as a little girl. And so that, he said, and easily 90% of the ones who reported it. And he said he would venture to say that it would be closer to 95%, possibly 100%. And in his case, he was referring to both sexual and physical abuse. But I'm saying all that to say that women, in this particular situation where I did this research and I contacted these substance abuse programs, that the majority of the women who became seriously addicted to drugs were sexually abused by somebody when they were a little girl. And so I'm giving you that to suggest to you that what we see as far as appearances go, it just does not give us the whole story. And so to judge somebody, to you know, make them the subject of our gossip is, we're missing the mark. We are missing the mark, and we're willing to do that. We're not understanding that, again, appearances don't tell the whole story. Along with that same research, my paper was on, you know, the correlation between women who are addicted to drugs and childhood sexual abuse. But I was also curious, so I did some more research. I didn't actually interview anyone, but just online, just did some research and looked at some other professors and folk who were working on advanced degrees who had already done some research on this. But as it relates to prostitutes and whether prostitutes, you know, what percentage of prostitutes also experienced some childhood sexual abuse. And those figures were humongous. At least 75% in this one study. 75%. This guy. I'm gonna have to look it up because now I'm really curious to see, you know, if he has done any additional work. But he did a documentary, and 75% of the prostitutes that he encountered had been sexually abused by somebody, and this was incest, by somebody in their family. 75%. And so that was just so eye-opening for me. It was so eye-opening because, you know, that's in my opinion, a really, you know, severe example, a really, you know, just heart-wrenching circumstances about why a person's appearance just does not tell the whole story. But that applies to all of us. Nobody knows our whole story. We don't know anybody else's whole story. So how can we feel comfortable, you know, criticizing them, you know, putting them down for decisions that they make, you know, just casting aspersion on them based on what we see with our limited view of their life, you know? That's one of the things that helps us to be able to forgive other people, because unless we were there with them 24/7, we cannot know the whole story. We just cannot. You know, when we look at our parents, when we look at the people, the adults in our lives, you know, who were the authority figures for us, and we look at, you know, the way that they behaved, if they treated us inappropriately, you know, if they did things that we wished, you know, had not happened, we don't have the whole story. We still don't have, even if it's a relative and we think we know their lives, we still don't have the whole story. We just don't. We just do not have the whole story. And so I'm tying all of this back into gossip, because when we make somebody else the topic of our discussion on a regular basis, okay, number one, we don't have the whole story. So how we're judging them, how we are speaking negatively about them is from a limited perspective. It's from what we know, and we don't know the whole story, right? And then it's really, really important for us to recognize that the energy that we exude when we gossip does far more harm to us than it does to anybody else. And the thing that I really want to hammer home is that if you are in a position in your life where you are serious about determining, or if you have already determined, acting on manifesting your life purpose, gossip cannot be a part of the equation. It just cannot. And then the other thing is that we have to think about, you know, as mothers, as aunties, as, you know, just as grown women who have younger girls in our lives, what do we want to teach them about gossip? What do we want to teach them about gossip? How do we want gossip to show up in their lives? How? Because the way that we treat it, the way that we participate with it, the way that we engage it, you know, it doesn't just impact us. It impacts them as well. It teaches them how to treat other women. It teaches them that, you know, it's okay to gossip. Gossip's harmless. Gossip doesn't do anybody any harm. And, I'm doing it from this position of knowing what's best for this particular person, you know. That is arrogance. That is, you know, a degree of arrogance, because we think that, you know, other people are supposed to live their lives according to our standards. We think that other people are supposed to, you know, have the same beliefs, the same values, the same outlooks, the same everything that we have, because if somebody else is doing something differently that we don't agree with and we find that, you know, we are in a position to gossip about it, what we're basically saying is they're wrong because they're not us. They're wrong because they don't see it the way that we see it. When we all see things differently, we all you know, have different life experiences that inform the way that we move and breathe and live in this world, you know. So that's my spiel on gossip. I'm going back to what the title of the chapter is, Stop Gossiping. Just stop it. Cut it out. Oh, let me see. Okay, and if you were a person who used to or continues to immerse yourself in gossip, then, again, self-forgiveness is a part of that equation, you know. Oh, yeah, I did want to go over one more piece in this chapter where it talks about, where is it? Okay, it says, an active SOS clarifies murky, previously unidentified sensations that flow within you, like how gossiping really makes you feel, okay? Silence strips gossip of its power, creating a transparency behind which guilt, embarrassment, and shame can no longer hide. Left unattended, they naturally dissolve, okay? So if you, you know, used to gossip and you're trying to do something about it, right, and you have these feelings of guilt and embarrassment about, you know, the fact that you used to gossip, don't beat yourself up about that. Just don't, all right? You are in a very important process, and you have to feel those feelings in order for you to move beyond them. You can't just decide, okay, you know, I'm not going to gossip anymore, and then, you know, these feelings come, and then you just want to move beyond. Don't rush through them. Don't rush through them. They're going to feel funky. They're going to feel, you know, like remorse. They're going to feel, again, like guilt, embarrassment, shame. Just you know, don't give it any energy. When you are in the silence, first of all, you are forgiving yourself. You are constantly forgiving yourself. You are constantly cutting yourself some slack. You are immersing yourself in the self-compassion, okay? And the degree that you are doing the seven principles, spending time in the silence, the self-forgiveness, paying attention to your thoughts and words, gratitude for sure, then the more these feelings, if gossip was a major character in your life, these feelings will start to dissolve. They will. They will start to dissolve. They will start to go away. And the other thing that I said, don't get bogged down by it. Feel it. There's energy swirling beneath it, seeking to express itself through you. That's really, really important, okay? The remorse-like funk is dissolved in the silence as positive energy sent to your former subjects passes through it. That's really important. That's the part that I wanted to talk about. If you, you know, used to gossip or you're still gossiping and you want to, you know, eliminate it from your life, and let me use the example of you used to gossip, okay, and so these feelings of embarrassment and shame and guilt, you know, they have immersed. They have emerged, rather. They have emerged in your psyche, right? It is really important, and this is really effective, too, to help dissolve all of that negative stuff. Think about the person or persons that you used to gossip about and send them positive energy. You don't have to say anything to them. You don't. But just in your silent time, bring those persons to mind and decide that you want something good to happen in their life. Decide that you are sending them positive energy. Okay? When you do that, all of that negative stuff that, you know, cropped up in your life, that negative energy that cropped up in your life as a result of gossip, that totally dissolves. The intention behind it is so freaking powerful. If you, while you are spending time in the silence, and this topic of gossip is something that you are trying to you know, move beyond, all right, the subjects of your gossip, bring them to mind, send them positive energy, and do it more than once. Do it more than once. The negative energy, the embarrassment, the guilt, that will dissolve. It will go away, and you will feel probably a good 30 pounds lighter. I'm telling you the truth. It will do a number on the energy in your space. And what's important about that, too, is once you send that positive energy to your former gossip topics, be prepared. Be prepared to welcome some goodness into that space, because the universe doesn't like a vacuum. It doesn't like empty space, right? So if you remove something negative from your life, intentionally welcome some good energy into your life. Intentionally do that. Expect it. Expect it, because it will show up. That's the way the universe works. That's the way it works. That's why, you know, if you've ever heard, you know, someone say that, you know, I'm getting rid of, you know, clutter. One of the things is that when you get rid of clutter, expect, you know, some goodness to replace the space where that clutter took up, right? Or if you are expecting, you know, some goodness to come into your life, you want to make space for it, get rid of some things, give away some things, you know, throw some things out that you're no longer using. Same principle applies with this energy. If you are eliminating a negative energy waster like gossip from your life, you are creating space in your life for goodness to flow. And the other thing is, too, when you are no longer gossiping, you're no longer at that back door preoccupied with the gossip. Now you can hear the good stuff that's being presented to you at your front door. You can hear that doorbell. You can hear the knocking on the door of the good things that are trying to show up in your life, because they are there. They are there. But if you're preoccupied with something else, you can't hear it. I'm breathing. This is a really, really, really important topic. Really important. And it also goes to, you know, those who think that because they're not actually speaking words of gossip, but they're just listening to gossip, so they're not really doing any harm. Just listening is bad, too. Number one, you're giving gossipers an audience. So that's keeping that foolishness going. But when you are there listening to the negativity about someone else's life, when you are there listening to someone discuss somebody else's poor judgment, someone else's mistake, putting somebody else down, you are listening, you are allowing that energy into your space. And the energy that you allow into your space, you are giving it to your subconscious mind, and your subconscious mind is like, oh, she likes this kind of energy, so let me bring some experiences that have this kind of energy attached to it, to them. Let me bring her more of this because apparently she likes it. Let me bring more of this kind of negativity into her life because this is what she seems to thrive in. So listening to gossip, you know, may feel like, oh, well, I wasn't the one talking. I wasn't the one adding my tooth. No, if you were listening, you gave the gossipers an audience. You helped to maintain that space of negativity. You were a part of it. You were definitely a part of it, right? So, but you also, again, have to cut yourself some slack. You have to, you know, immerse yourself into that self-compassion, that self-forgiveness, and recognize that when we know better, we do better. When we recognize just how negative and draining and distracting and what an obstacle gossip is, then and only then can we eliminate it from our lives on a permanent basis without apologizing to anybody and without really explaining to anybody. You can if you want to, because if someone is interested in you explaining, that means they may be ready to give up gossip too. And maybe if they have, you know, observed the way that you have removed yourself from it and you explain why, you know, that whole ripple effect thing, the way that you stand in your truth, the way that you stand in your authenticity, people see it. People see it. You know, if people at work, you know, were accustomed to seeing you and then, you know, in the break room with other folk who gossip and you're no longer there anymore, they see that. They see that. And I'm telling you, I'm warning you that when you, and it's not just gossip, whenever you remove anything negative from your life, you open up the space for positive energy, for goodness, for magnificent things to crop up in your life. Brace yourself, because that's what happens. Brace yourself. Okay. I think that's all that I have to say about the G word. For real this time. Yeah. I mentioned last week that I was going to give you guys a heads up on when this special section in the South Florida Times was going to be published, and it is going to be published tomorrow. I told you that I got a chance to, with some of the women I got to meet for the first time, and some of them that I knew, I got to know, to learn more about them. This is a really, really cool special section. It's a health and fitness special section, and I'm just encouraging you guys to pick it up. If you're in the South Florida area, you can pick it up. The newspaper is available at Publix, Winn-Dixie, CVS. You can go online to South Florida Times, to sfltimes.com, to actually see the special section. You can see it online. And you can also pick it up in these stores. And there are other stores, too, where it's available. But those three, definitely. And so, yeah, I encourage you to pick that up. And I don't think I have any other bits of information to share with you tonight other than we will be back. I'm going to speak English. We will be back. I will be back next week, Wednesday night at 7:30 for another chapter. Next week's chapter is Deeper Than Jealousy. That's a good one, too. That's a really good one. And the thing that I realized, too, with what's in part two is that, you know, again, if you've, you know, been following along, or if you've read the book and you've read part one and you've seriously, you know, if you've given yourself the gift of those principles of spending time in the silence and the other principles that go along with that, the gratitude, self-forgiveness, then when you get to part two, these things are easier to part ways with. They're easier to create some distance between you and gossip, between you and jealousy. And you will probably find that you have already started to create distance between those things and yourself, just because of the investment that you're making in nurturing, developing, building up your own sisterhood of self, your own SOS. That's just how it goes. Just really how it goes. And I'm really excited for those of you who are, you know, putting in the work, because it shows up. Man, it really, really, really shows up. It shows up in your life in huge ways. And so, yeah, with that, I am going to thank you beautiful people for hanging out with me again on another episode of the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club, and I'll be back with you again next Wednesday night at the same time for this discussion on Deeper Than Jealousy. If you all have any questions, comments, or brilliant insights about anything that has been discussed, and you want to shoot me an email to ask your question, then you can do so. My email address is michellehollinger303@gmail.com, because I recognize that some of you may have questions and you may, you know, may not feel comfortable calling in. So you can send it to me via email, michellehollinger303@gmail.com. And if you send an email with a question, please indicate in the email whether you want to remain private or not, or if you don't mind me sharing it on the air. Because typically, if you have a question, you know, other people have the same question. And so, you know, sharing it on the air will help not only, you know, you with the answer that is provided, but also other people who may have the same question. So just, you know, indicate that for me if you want it to remain private or if you don't mind it being shared on the air. And so with that, I am going to bid you guys a wonderful Wednesday night, and I wish that you, I hope that you, I trust that you will have a fantastic remaining week, the rest of this week, and a wonderful weekend, and I'll be with you again next Wednesday. Oh, before I go, for those of you who are mothers, happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to each and every one of you. And my blessing, my prayer for you is that this Mother's Day is one of, if not the best, that you have ever experienced. God is blessing you. Have a wonderful night, wonderful Mother's Day, fantastic weekend.